everyone. I'm your host, Liana Pavane, founder of TTYL, Human Connection Advocate, Certified Life Coach, and most importantly, a human that's just trying to figure it out. I'm your unapologetic 20-something native New Yorker, advocating self-ships. Yes, I'm in a relationship with myself while navigating the dating world. I'm on a mission to break down dating stigmas in our society and to stop ghosting. I started this podcast after my ex broke up with me over the phone. I know, at least it wasn't a post-it. And I realized that our dating etiquette was severely lacking due to technology. Each week, I invite guests onto the podcast from all walks of life to discuss their first date horror stories and best dates. Because let's be honest, we don't focus on the positives enough when it comes to dating. The best part about this podcast is that after each episode, I've walked away feeling more confident about myself and my relationships. So whether or not you're single, in a relationship, or find yourself in a situationship, I welcome you to get comfy as I dive into the uncomfy so we can normalize it together. Do you want to feel magical every day? Now you can. When you adorn yourself with glitter from Unicorn Snot, you too can shine bright like a diamond. Add sparkle to your next night out, your first date, or just for yourself while you work from home because self-ships. Use code LIANA15UNICORNSNOT for 15% off their face and body products or their new Bio Glitter Sunscreen with 30 SPF so that you can literally shimmer in the sunshine. That's code LIANA15UNICORNSNOT at unicornsnot.com. Everyone, welcome back to another episode of Ghosts of Dates Past. I am super excited about today's episode. I'm here with Amy, who has written an amazing book that I can't wait for you to hear about. So, Amy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Liana. I'm so happy to be here.
Yes, happy to have you. So, why don't you go ahead and tell everyone a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, I've always been an artist my whole life. I was a professional potter for most of my career life. And then I decided to go back and get a degree in a certain kind of counseling, alternative counseling. So I became a therapist in my mid-40s. And that overlapped with my dating experiences. So as I was learning to be a therapist in this school, it was a lot about working on yourself and your own issues, not just working on other people. So I was really working a lot on myself, my personality, my quirks, the things that I had repressed and hadn't totally become friendly with in myself at the same time as I was dating. And it just all came into this central place where it only made sense to do it publicly. It only made sense to share everything I was learning because I was growing so much through my dating experiences and learning so much about myself. Does that make sense that becoming a therapist and dating at the same time would kind of like bring up some new things, maybe a little different than normal?
Definitely, definitely. And so you've written this book, and can you tell everyone a little bit about that as well?
Sure. So when I became single, I had always been a serial monogamist. I decided when I was in college that I wasn't built for marriage. I was never going to go for like the one. So I had love chapters, and I was still a monogamist. I would just have short term, which for me was about 3 years long. So most of my life, I was in these 3-year beautiful relationships that I stayed close with almost everybody afterwards. They evolved nicely, I'll say. And that really worked for me. And then in my 40s, I had been in a 10-year long relationship. And I was starting to cook, like the pressure cooker kind of thing, and I was going to explode. So when I got out of there, I was like, I am going to be single for a while. You know, I was like really not going to stay in, I was not going to get myself into another relationship quickly. I needed my freedom. I wanted to, and in your 40s, I don't think that you're in your 40s yet, but in your 40s, it's kind of like a now or never thing where, you know, at least for me, I could feel that I still had it, you know, I still had like the potential to be sexual and juicy and free and creative, and my body still kind of looked similar to how it had always looked, and I could feel that things were about to start hanging and changing. So I really wanted to have a lot of experiences, and I didn't want to have that kind of settled down and like, I don't know. I just didn't want to feel like I was stagnant in any way. I wanted to be growing and learning and juicy and lots of experiences. So my dating experience was unique in that even when I entered the chapter, I was not, I knew it was going to be a long chapter. I knew it was going to be years of dating. And because of that, I knew I was going to be collecting a lot of data. I was going to be having lots of experiences and getting a lot of training, let's say, dating training out of it. So I really wanted to turn it into both learning for me and learning for other people, especially because it was so crazy hard. Like I never expected that dating would be difficult in the way that it was for me.
Yeah, excited to dive into that more. So let's hear your first date horror story.
Oh yeah, but I just realized I didn't really answer your question. My book is, I blogged about every date after the date. I would go home, write it out. What was my lesson? What was I learning? And I'd blog about it. And then people would say, this should be a book. So I took most of my blog entries, cleaned them up, made them make sense, and put them into a book. So my book is 82 first dates, basically, 82 different first dates.
Wow, that's incredible. Amazing. Very cool. So yeah, now let's dive into one of them.
The horror story. Okay, I have two really good horror stories, but I think I'll illustrate what I'm talking about with my very first date. So I got onto OkCupid and I matched with somebody pretty quickly, and that was exciting, and he was very handsome and he was an artist, and I was all excited and got dressed up, and then I met him and there he was, and this was one of those situations where he actually looked like his profile, which was nice. So I was like, there he is in real life. And we sat down for coffee, and I realized, like, well, I didn't even want to be drinking coffee in the middle of the day. Like, I drink coffee in the morning, not at 3 p.m. So right away, I'm like doing something that doesn't feel right to me. I'm drinking coffee that I don't want. And then we're sitting there together and I start asking him questions, and he answers, and I ask more questions and he answers those. And I just kept asking questions. And pretty soon I just felt like, what am I doing? Like, I started to feel really uncomfortable, and I could feel that the whole date had tipped and become completely all about him. And somehow I was like, I'm abandoning myself consciously. I don't even know how to change this at this point. I've asked him so many questions and he's getting more and more excited, and I'm shriveling up inside. And I started to really get uncomfortable physically. And that's what led me to realize that dating was really challenging for me, especially because of that thing of abandoning myself. Like, I contributed to making it all about him. I've heard a lot of women complain that, like, you know, men don't ask them any questions, but what are we doing on our side? Like, I should have stopped asking all those questions. I could have done something differently. And it took me many years of dating to really work my chops of learning how to do dating differently, the way that it felt good to me.
Yeah, no, that's a really great point. I feel like from this podcast, I've definitely learned how to date better, even to listen more deeply and hold space for the other person to talk. And then also, I think something that people tell me just listening to the podcast is, oh, you provide your own insights and you kind of don't only ask questions, you also participate in the conversation. And I think that is really what dating is about. It's being able to hold space, but also contribute.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's a really unique situation, isn't it? Like, dating, it's not just, when do two people meet each other and start like assessing every little different detail to see whether or not they might be a good match for something or other, you know? It's just a really unique thing that we do. It's an interesting world, and I really wanted to learn how to make that process clean, really clean, and to not be playing around with, you know, trying to seduce or to be any kind of intrigue. I didn't want to make anything up about myself. I didn't want to play any games at all. That was my lesson as I went on with dating, is just like, and I think I have listened to some of your podcasts, and you're such a warm, the way that you talk about it, like making it a really good experience. And, you know, like, at the beginning of my dating experiences, I think I was a little bit more open to just having a good time with whoever in whatever way. But after a while, and this could be partly about where I'm at in my life and being really busy with career and other things, it was more like chop chop. You know, I felt like I'm not in this for friends. I have too many friends already. I'm already responsible to too many people. I'm looking for a sexually compatible person. And I can tell you that in the first 5 minutes. Like, I can tell you that pretty quickly, if at least if we're not. You know, I don't know if you've ever done this, but you get on a date with somebody and right away you have like a little bit of a turn inside and you're like, okay, I'm going to get through this date, but this is not somebody I'm ever going to want to get together with again. You know, how you can tell that pretty much right away. You're nodding. Yeah.
I totally resonate with what you're saying. And I think it's funny because a lot of my guy friends give me shit for that and say, oh, give him a chance. You don't know, blah, blah, blah. And I know myself and I know if I'm going to like someone or not after, again, like you said, the first few moments of meeting someone. I think there is a proven fact that women can tell within the first 4 seconds or something. So I feel that way. I'm quick to assess and I've been on dates where I look across from them and know. This happened to me recently where I could tell that I wasn't interested in anything long-term with the guy, but that didn't mean that I couldn't have a good time in that moment and just, okay, this is a fun time. We can go back and hang out, but after that, I'm never going to see him again. And, you know, obviously knowing if you feel comfortable with that, that's totally your prerogative, but I think it's so important to know what you want. And I think I've been in that space recently also of just, like what you were saying, you were very clear early on what you wanted even for your life, that you'd never wanted to get married. And I feel like I always swap between, I want something casual, I'm really focused on my career as well and my entrepreneurial pursuits. And then I get to a point where that becomes really exhausting and I want something more. And I'm definitely in that place of shifting back to, I'm putting my energy out there for something long-term and something better, and I want to make connections, because every time I put myself out there with a guy and I say I'm fine with something casual, they run the other way. It's like, oh yeah, so interesting. I'm literally putting myself out there as like, hey, I'm here for a good time, not a long time. And guys are like, oh, that's really refreshing to hear, same. And then we hang out a few times and then
that's how casual it was.
So like, interesting.
Ultra casual.
Yeah. Super casual, I guess. Yeah. I mean, it's funny, I think, in those senses in terms of casual, because the boundary of what that means from person to person can be so different.
Right. Right. Yes. Getting clear on what all these little things of what things mean is so important. And actually, this is a good point, even just in dating in general. Like, let's say two people decide to be sexual together, you know, to one person that could mean, you know, oh, well, I thought that meant you would call me tomorrow at least, or I thought that meant we were going to go out now, or they might think that meant we were going to get married, and the other person might have a whole different variety of what meaning means. And I think it's just really important, especially when there's a potential for unclarity, to get clear about meaning. Before, it's a way to not get yourself hurt, you know, to check in. What does it mean if we kiss? What will that mean to you? Some person, for me, it might just mean like, oh, I just wanted to see what the kiss would feel like. To the other person, it might mean, oh no, it's because I have these big feelings for you, you know, and I want to connect really deeply. So any physical act, especially, I think it's good to check in about it. Like, what does it mean to you if we cuddle? You know, what does it mean to you if we stay over tonight, or anything?
Yeah, no, totally. And you mentioned this kind of, you like to cut to the chase, this kind of chop chop mentality. So what are some things that you kind of assess, I guess, when you go on first dates with people?
Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, I like to just feel inside my body. How do I feel with them? Is my body moving towards them? Am I getting excited? Do I want more? Or do I feel protected? You know, we can get so much information just from the inside our bodies, just from our physical responses. So I really tune into my body a lot. Another thing I started doing right away was to say, At the end of the date, I do not make a plan for a second date, no matter what, unless it's like the best date ever or the worst date ever, where it's just like we're so clear. But my practice is to not make a plan at the end, because I believe that when you're actually on the date, there's too many moving parts. There's too much going on. There's too much. But at the first, I felt like I had like a whole checklist going on one side of like, they have cute eyes. Oh, he just said something a little weird. I think he might be racist. You know, like all these little things. And I'm just trying to assess everything. And then by meantime, you're having this conversation with them, like you're actually talking. So there's this mental checklist happening and the conversation. And I decided I just want it to be about the conversation. I just want to be here, whatever here means. And then at the end of the date, let's separate, go our separate ways, get back into our own spaces, our own fields, where I'm not looking at your response to my question and, you know, we're not feeling each other anymore in that way. We can just kind of sense the essence of the chemistry after the date. Do I feel pulled back to go back for more? Would I like to have another date? Or thanks, but no thanks. And so I call that the walk away, because I would start dreading that question at the end of the date. Oh my God, they're gonna ask me if I wanna go out again, and I'm gonna abandon myself and say yes when I mean no. And you know, I would just get a little, it was too much thinking. It was too much strategizing and organizing I had to do. So when I started the walk away, it was just clean. I'd tell them early on, let's have this date, let's relax, let's be as authentic as we can, see how we feel, separate, and then check in to see if we wanna have a second date.
I love that. That's something I'm going to take, because I think I feel the same way. I've definitely been on dates where I get super in my head, or I start analyzing the other person across from me, or thinking into the future with this person or potential. And there are other times where I feel like super in the moment, and then even still, I'll walk away and we'll message, we had a great time, and then it kind of just doesn't go anywhere.
Kind of no juice there. It's interesting, huh?
Yeah. And that happened to me recently. And I feel like, I mean, I think there was definitely, like, I felt so connected to this person on the date. And we both messaged, we had a great time and blah, blah, blah. But then it kind of just fizzled out from there. And I feel like sometimes it isn't meant to go anywhere else. Sometimes it's just a great date. And it doesn't have to be anything more. And I think listening to your body moments, I think the idea of reflection is something that I've been trying to put into practice more too, is, you know, after date one, date two, date three, date four, reflecting on each date and really picking apart if you like the person, not vice versa. You know, how do you feel when you're around them? Are they respecting your boundaries? Are they, you know, if they're constantly messaging you and kind of calling you all the time and clinging, like, is that something that you were looking for, or is it just, are you kind of throwing everything out the window because it's new and exciting? But that doesn't mean that they're the right person. I think those moments can make you feel like, oh my gosh, this exciting new person is in my life and they want to spend all this time with me. But don't forget that you had a life before that person.
Right. Right. And that's another thing, is just styles around communication. It's so nice when you find somebody and you match well, you know, when their communication style is similar to yours. And then if it's not, it's nice to kind of get clear about it, because like you were saying, it could feel kind of overwhelming or clingy, whereas another person might have just gone out with somebody who said, you didn't message me enough, so I'm breaking up with you. So they're feverishly messaging you to try to, you know, we all have all these moving parts and we're all just trying to figure ourselves out. And I loved what you said before, that even what you want kind of changes in time, or even who we are as women. You know, we have cycles, and sometimes we're more extroverted and other times we're more introverted. So with all these things moving, it's good to do a lot of checking in. But I do feel like when there's true chemistry, we just know it. Like you were saying, women know it within the first couple of seconds usually. And it's always mutual. That's, I think, one thing that's really relieving about true chemistry, true romantic chemistry, is that it's always mutual. That's not just sexual chemistry. I think romantic chemistry is when all the things align. You know, it's like a multi-leveled alignment. And you can't fake it. You can't force it. You can block it. You can say no thank you to it. But when it's true chemistry, it's just, it's objective. It's true. Yeah, it's really there.
Yeah, I think so too. Like, when you know, it's when the other person is equally as invested and reaching out to you, and you feel this undeniable tension and pull with the other person. It's like that I always say that you have these strings and tethers to each person that you've been with in a relationship, no matter how short or long it's been. And I am a believer that it's okay to block people, especially if they've emotionally, mentally, or physically abused you. And that's the only way that that is cut, that those strings would no longer be connected. I think obviously the memory lives on, but if you truly cut tie, like that, I think that's the saying, cutting ties, you really are. But otherwise, the openness or the possibility of reconnection is kind of always there, because you will always be connected in some way, shape, or form. And you gave a part of yourself to that person and vice versa. So I think that's just something that I believe in. And it's interesting.
Yeah. Me and my best friend call this a cable, and it's as though there were like a thick cable that comes out of your solar plexus and connects you, or out of your heart and connects you to that other person. And those cables, yeah, they, when they're a real cable, they don't get broken, you know, like they're there forever. So the way that I feel about all of my ex-partners almost across the board is the same way that I ever felt about them. You know, I have the same texture of love for them. You know, our vibe together is the same. We've moved on, circumstances in our lives have changed, and even with one of them, I actually like have to block him, because, you know, not like on my phone or anything, but energetically, you know, that like I have a wall up to protect myself, because it did get kind of abusive verbally and emotionally, and I decided at some point, like, no more. But I still feel like he and I have this eternal cable, because we did share a lot. And yeah, I feel it's like kind of like karma, right? Like I feel karmically connected, and I'm at peace with that. And I find that anybody who challenges me or disturbs me is just a place where I can still grow, you know, something I can still learn about myself.
That's really beautiful. And do you find that it's easier, or gets easier, to ask for what you want after being in this long-term relationship? And we'll dive more into that. But, or have you found that it just really depends on the person and how honest they're willing to be and how authentic they show up as?
Well, for me, I have my goal in my life for myself is radical authenticity or radical honesty. So I don't want it to ever have anything to do with the other person. I continually challenge myself to come to the table with my truth, and I get all these weird body symptoms when I'm not. You know, I'll start sweating, I'll start shaking, I'll get uncomfortable, I'll have to shift around in my seat a lot. So I get tons of signals from my body when I'm not asking for what I want. And it's a lifelong journey for me, you know, to ask for what I want. It still comes up. Oh, by the way, even though I never wanted to get married, I would marry my current partner. And so things changed for me during this dating experience, because I'll bring that in a minute. But I just want to say that I think it's the most important thing, especially for women, to learn to ask for what they want. Men seem to have a little bit more of a finger on the entitlement button, you know, and I don't mean all men, but in general, if we're gonna like average out the sexes, women tend to be more giving and accommodating and take care of the other person. And men tend to have an okay time receiving. And flipping that around, for women to do that for themselves, I think is so important. Know what you want, learn to ask for it. I named my book Can I Be Honest With You, because I would find myself in these trap situations where I wasn't being honest, and then I would use that line. I would say, can I be honest with you, as like a lifeline to get myself out of my own inner turmoil that I wasn't bringing myself to the table. It's like, can I be honest with you, please? So, yeah, it was hard for me in the relationship to ask for what I wanted. And it's just hard for me in general, because I'm conditioned that way to not ask for what I want. So I make it a practice, like a spiritual practice, basically, to know what I want and ask for it.
And what a beautiful practice, honestly. It is. And I resonate with that a lot. I am definitely, as I've gotten older and gone through dating experiences and having this podcast, I've been way more honest with myself and way more honest with other people and not beating around the bush or, you know, whispering and starting these rumors about things. I think, you know, when we're younger, it's so much about the excitement of a crush and the anticipation of something that could happen. And I feel like now, rather than, sure, I'll talk about some things with my friends or with my mom or therapist or whatever, but I so often feel like I know what I want in my gut, and I'd so much rather go to the source for the answers rather than question. Like, it's like we spend all this time questioning when we could just have an answer in 5 seconds. We can literally just call the person. And of course, the anticipation of not knowing what their answer will be causes anxiety. And obviously, you need to catch them at the right time. And there are circumstances that come into play. But in general, I feel like so many of us hide from expressing our truth because we don't want to hear the answer that we already know. And I think a lot of that goes to, like, whenever I've had to ask the question, at least recently, of I'm confused or I'm getting mixed signals, you know that it's not going anywhere. If you're getting mixed signals, it's
that's
the end.
The sign.
But
yeah, that's the sign.
Right. But I would so much rather have a conversation with that person, because I get to then say that I did everything and I put myself out there and I showed up as my authentic self and I was honest. I leave that with them thinking, wow, that was really big of her to call me and ask that question. She's a really great person. And I think that's just how I'd like to be remembered, rather than sending a text message that blows up at them and calls them names and blames them for XYZ when I don't know what they're going through or what they want. We never had that conversation.
Right. Good for you. That's how I felt too, is like, I just want to make all of dating better. And if we can all just be clear and be honest and be open about what we want and what we don't want and how we're feeling, then we can peace out with each other and leave each other whole, you know, instead of breaking off a piece of somebody and running. Or, you know, people can be so mean and they can make so many assumptions about other people without really knowing. And I do think just checking in and being open-hearted and meeting people human to human and being as honest and open as we can with each other, it's just like, it's almost like a martial art. We can kind of step into the center, have our little tussle or whatever we do, our kata and our sparring, and then we bow at the end and honor the other for who they are. It's like namaste. I see you as a human. I see the light in you. I honor you. And yeah, maybe we're not going out of this together, but good luck on your journey. I always like to wish people good luck when I end it. It's kind of like, okay, we got in here, we tried this little thing, clearly it's not right for us, but you know, I'm rooting for you as we both go on to try to find that funny little puzzle of dating where people click together.
Yeah, holding compassion for people that you date in the moment and also afterwards. I think someone said this, I don't remember where, but if you treated your partner with as much respect in the beginning as you did at the end, the world would be a better place. And I think that's so true, because and even someone brought the whole idea of a breakup, talking about how you would like to be broken up with, or how would you like to have a difficult conversation, or, you know, if I have something to talk about with you, what's the best way? Do you want me to bring the subject up and then you take time to think about it? Or do you want to set aside just, you know, because it's like, you don't want to just spring that on someone where you're out to brunch or something on a Saturday and you're having a great, you thought it was a great morning, and meanwhile, they've been mulling over this situation. Yeah, that happened a week ago. It's like, what's the best way to approach those conversations? And I think, just being open and honest as to, like, this is how I appreciate communication and this is what good communication means to me, because like you said, everyone has a different way of, or viewpoint of what is good or bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what works for them. And yeah, what you were just talking about, that I call that ambushing, when you stew on something and then they do one little thing and you jump on them for that thing that they do. And I think, except unless it's brunch, that's a little different, but it's still an ambush because you were just expecting a nice brunch. And I do think that it's great to say to somebody, just as a general rule, not even in, you know, dating, but in relationships in general, if you have something that's difficult to bring up, you can give the person an opportunity and whether or not to talk about it and when. And if I say, Liana, I have something that I want to talk with you about. Is there a good time for you? You know, there's something that's a little challenging for me to bring up. Is there a good time for you? Then you get to see, wait a minute, like, or do I want to hear more information about this, or right now is good, or later? Instead of just bringing it up and pinning that person to the wall, wherever, whatever they were doing in their lives, you know, they get to have agency to step into that martial arts type of circle with you to have that little conflict out, or whatever it is, that difficult conversation. So just asking the other person if they're willing to have the conversation and when a good time for them is a good thing to remember.
100%. So I want to hear your best first date story.
Oh yeah, my best one. I had a lot of really amazing dates. That's was a joy about writing the book. But I'd say that the best one was when I had met this man on OkCupid, and he was Australian, but he was coming to the United States, and he came here for a conference, and we were kind of messaging lightly. And then he wound up buying a plane ticket and coming and staying with me for 4 days. And he was somebody who, went the first second I saw his profile, all of my bells were going off. It was the first time I had seen a profile that I was like, oh my God, this guy. And everything between us flowed. We had a video call before he bought his ticket to make sure that we actually felt similarly, because sometimes pictures and profiles don't really translate. As you've probably experienced. And anyway, like, it was just utter magic. We completely fell in love for 4 days. We had a little bubble of a love affair, and then he went back to Australia, and now we're friends. But it was just absolutely amazing. It was just like spectacular.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I also love it because I'm going to Australia on Friday.
Hey! Oh, which part? I can let him know.
Yes! Oh my God. I'm going to Sydney and Cairns.
Okay, he's in Perth. Yeah, he's a great guy. So one thing about this dating phase for me was that I decided I wasn't going to do this serial monogamy thing anymore. I was going to be polyamorous. I like didn't know what that meant, but I was like, I know I can't do the one person married for the rest of my life thing. And so I decided I'm not going to promise any kind of monogamy to anybody anymore and see how that goes. And my ideal in my head was to manifest a lover who, like, I had great sexual connection with, and we were creative and explorational, but didn't have necessarily all the things that it takes to make a domestic relationship happen. And then I was going to find a partner where we were lovers, but also liked the intimacy of the day-to-day together. And in the end, that's what I got. And I couldn't suggest it strongly enough to anybody, because it has the openness. So that's why I can get married now. I can get married to my partner because he supports my relationship with my lover. You know, they get along great, actually. And yeah, so now that it's so funny, like, now that I'm polyamorous, I could get married, you know. it's a little counterintuitive, but I'm such a creature of freedom that I needed that openness in order to say, I trust you enough to stay with you. I don't feel like you're trying to trap me into this and hold on to me till death do us part. And so that situation is really working well for me. And we're going on 4 and 5 years with the two of them. So it's really stable and amazing. And it's still as good, like, both keep growing. Like, my partnership deepens every day. And with my lover, things stay amazingly high forever. So far, forever. Yeah.
Wow. That's an incredible... Yeah, that's just an incredible experience that you have, and and story. And I feel like sometimes it takes us a while to figure out or navigate what we're looking for. And, you know, how beautiful that you were able to find what works for you. And I think it's also just with the changing of times in our modern society of all of these things are being opened up and explored and accepted into our society. Whereas, you know, 20, 30 years ago, all of this was swept under the rug, under lock and key. And so I feel like people are more open about talking about it, which makes other people, you know, if you felt weird about it before, it's like, oh, I never really understood why. And then you discover this thing, polyamory, and you're like, oh, this feels right. I never really knew about this before, but something is speaking to me here. And then you explore it and it just is, this world opens up for you. And then you realize that's what you were missing.
Yeah, I'm so grateful for the zeitgeist that has changed everything from when I was little, from being like monogamous, heterosexual marriage, you know, to so many different things, so many different genders, so many different types of relationships. Pretty much the world is our relationship oyster now, and you can really pick and choose unless you feel some deep conditioning from your family, which a lot of people probably do feel kind of trapped in the belief systems of their families, or there's rigidity definitely still in certain populations. But I live in a part of the country in the Northwest where things are pretty wide open, and I'm so grateful for it. I'm so grateful for people not having to hide their sexuality or hide their gender issues, or high, you know, people can come out now and be more of who they are.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. And so something I've shifting a little bit, I've been thinking a lot about the universe recently, and that sometimes things just fall into our laps rather than us searching for it. So do you believe in that when it comes to romantic relationships?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I think that there's definitely a cosmic divine order at play. And within that, we are like little captains, each of us navigating our own ship through storms and, you know, the tropics, and who knows where we're going to go. But I think we're co-creating completely all the time. And for me, I think for myself and also with my clients, you know, if you're going through a long period of time when you're not manifesting that person that you're hoping is gonna show up, that's a gift from the universe. That time is a gift for you to deepen your own relationship to yourself. And so I think that we, in those times in between relationships, those are our opportunities for personal growth. It's just time to be our best selves, because we want to get into our next relationship as our best possible self. You know, we don't want to be bringing in like loads of trauma from other relationships that we haven't worked through into the next relationship. But then we just spin out the same old problems and we start to think that it's the other person's fault or everybody else's fault. So if we can work on ourselves during that time, it's a gift from the universe, I think, to deepen that, our self-love, really.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel like I've been leaning a lot into serendipity rather than always reaching and trying to find something for myself. I feel like recently I've also gone into that spiral a little bit, and I'm coming out of it as, okay, I don't really need someone right now. It's okay to take a step back and just let things happen as they're meant to happen and not go crazy searching for it. And obviously I'm going on this vacation. I'm on a three-week vacation before I start my new job. And I'm just taking that as time for me and time to like reset and regroup and refill my cup. And it's definitely been, I mean, already I just feel so much lighter in putting that energy out into the world, rather than this frantic, oh my gosh, like not desperation, but I think there is a different energy when we're not centered and grounded into who we are and who we could be and showing up for other people. And I mean, I do think that we're not ever going to be fully healed. I don't think that, it's not to say that there's not going to be triggers from past relationships and our new ones, but I do agree that in between each long-term relationship, at least it's important to take some time to reflect before jumping right back in too soon, especially if there are things to work through And sometimes there's not. Sometimes it just wasn't the right person, or they did something that was completely, you know, I never am one to dwell on situations where someone did something to harm me. That's just them being an asshole. That's not me doing anything wrong, right? I don't think there's anything to work through. I think it's just, okay, that person sucks. But there are instances where both parties were at play, or maybe you're noticing a pattern, like you mentioned, and it is important to work through those things for sure.
And a lot of those patterns are just the ones that we took from our childhood. And it's true, like you said, we don't fully figure it out, but the things that happen in our childhood for most of us, that's a lifetime of work, you know? We can work on that stuff forever. And in a fun way. It doesn't have to be hard work. It can be playful work. It could be forgiveness work for ourselves. It could be understanding our own personal myths more deeply. Why am I alive? You know, what am I doing here? You know, there's bigger existential questions, like, how do I do this dance with the universe? That we can always be playing with. It's funny to call it work because it really feels like play to me.
Yeah, no, totally. I mean, what I call the self-ship, yeah.
Uh-huh. And I'm also with you about just not blaming anybody, you know, that it's never anybody's fault. It's just all opportunities to understand more deeply, understand ourselves more deeply. I don't like to go through analysis and figuring out. I much prefer to go through what's left in my body. Like, you can think back to an old relationship and you can be like, okay, that relationship, what's still with me? And then you can bypass the mind completely, and the body will show you what's going on. And so, you know, I just thought of one. I have a feeling in my solar plexus. It feels a little bit like this. I can kind of get into the feeling of the feeling in my body. I can play it out. It's a little sword. I got a little sword in me in my solar plexus. And so, like I said, like, it can be playing, you know, there's ways to do it that are, but all of our memories, especially the unprocessed stuff, gets stored in the body. And so that's why it's great to learn to work with your body, because it's a way to get that stuff out, to not hold on to things anymore. And then we can be more fluid in our bodies, or more able to inhabit our bodies and live inside our bodies and feel more spontaneous and creative in our bodies.
Yeah, no, I love that. I agree. I mean, I spent so much time writing yesterday, and that is has been a form of creativity for me for so long. And dance is a really big form of expression for me. Walking outside without anything, you know, leaving my phone, walking outside, going for a walk in the park, and just exploring nature. Those are all ways that I've found help me to ground myself and also, like, let go of things energetically that aren't serving me anymore. So I love that you said that. Play.
Yeah, play, dance. Dance is great. I just have to say, I found social dance about, like, 3/4 of the way into my dating years, and, like, that was the best. I was, like, thrilled to find social dance. By that I mean, like, salsa, Latin dances, swing, those kinds of things where you're changing partners every song, because you're having these physical connections with somebody and then with somebody else. You know, it was like kind of like polyamorous dancing or something like that. It's like, let's check out this chemistry. Okay, let's check out this chemistry. And meantime, you're expressing, you're laughing, you're dancing, there's music, there's people, and it's just a great way for a single person to kind of, I don't know, it was highly satisfying to me to find social dancing as a dater, you know, as somebody who is dating, because there's lots of single people do that also. So it was kind of a way to get off the apps and into real person with a bunch of single people. And if I did have a little feeling with somebody, maybe I'd flirt with them, maybe I wouldn't, maybe they'd be there the next time, you know. It was a fun extra little piece of exciting drama in my dating life.
Yeah, no, that's so fun. Makes me want to go try some social dancing myself. So, and you're mentioning that, you know, meeting these people in these different experiences and out and about. So where have you met people mostly dating in your 40s?
Mostly I was online. It was almost all online. I just really liked it. I really liked getting good at dating online. I really liked honing my profile, so it was really clearly saying what I what I wanted and what I didn't. And by the end, I was making short video dates with people. Like, literally, what I did is I used the app Marco Polo, or you can use WhatsApp or an iPhone, and send a 30-second message. And for me, that saved me so much time in my chop chop efficiency. It saved me so much time because I'd just see the other person, they'd see me, we'd see each other moving and talking. It was very different from seeing a profile picture. And if you could see somebody moving and talking on video, then for me, it's like it gave me that 5 seconds of information of, oh yeah, there might be something there, or thanks, but no thanks. And I was able to really do that cleanly by the end, where I let people know, I've got this system, we're gonna get on video, I send you a 30-second message, you sent me a 30-second message, and then we'll see if we want to meet. And so that's how I used the apps eventually. I was on Bumble and OkCupid and Tinder, and used all three of those the same way, just to get somebody onto a quick video chat and then either go out or not.
Yeah, I love that. That's something that I started practicing during the pandemic as well. It was this concept that I found from a TED Talk that my friend showed me called a zero date. And it's basically the same thing as getting someone off going on a virtual date before you meet them in person, as kind of, you know, you're in your apartment, you're chilling. If you don't want to talk to them or they say something offensive, you can just end the call. I think you can tell your compatibility with someone. I think I went on one that I knew I didn't want to meet them, and he was interested, but I said, oh, it wasn't really vibing, which is, you know, tad uncomfortable, but at the end of the day, you got to do what's best for you and put yourself first 100%. So I think there's, especially with meeting people online and just online dating safety, and, you know, it's like what you were talking about in the beginning too, just the idea of, okay, I want to like chop, chop, chop. Like, it's that idea of also not wasting your time. I think something that I've been feeling is like, if you, and even with friendships, like I put this out into the universe last week, as I'm no longer going to reach out to people who don't reciprocate. I'm not going to make time or energy or put in effort for people who don't want to make time and energy for me. And I think that goes to show with dating as well. It's like, I think if you want to see me, you will make an effort to. I mean, it's something my dad says, even he, you know, that whole, if he wanted to, he would. He says that all the time. And it's so true, because if someone wanted to see me, they would make an effort to see me. And I'm no longer wanting to pine after people who don't want to be with me, because frankly, everyone is deserving of the kind of love that they want, and the love that is possible for them is out there, and you shouldn't ever have to chase it. It should just be.
Yes. Yeah, it shows a lot of like self-respect and self-care to say, you know what, these relationships, I can tell I'm putting in more effort than they are, and I don't want relationships that have that imbalance. It's not good for either person, you know. It's just, it's more ecological to find those mutual relationships that really work, where you can feel that you're both moving towards each other. But I did want to say one thing about just styles, because I am not a reacher outer. You know, I just almost never initiate anything. But if somebody calls me and wants to go on a walk, I'm like, oh, yay, I'm going to go on a walk. But it would never occur to me to call somebody and say, do you want to go on a walk? I just like don't think of that. I don't tend to initiate. I tend to just like work. So it's just interesting to notice, you know, that you might think, oh, Amy's not so interested in me because she never called me. You know, she would. If she wanted to hang out with me, she would call me. And I'm sitting here waiting for Liana to call me, and I'm like, I guess she's not into me anymore, because she used to call me all the time, but she must have changed her mind about me. You know, she must not like me anymore, because I don't know how to reach out to people. I never did it, you know? So there might be a couple people who actually have the desire but don't have the style to reach out.
Yeah, no, I think that's very insightful and a really good point. I think for me, you know, I think that's fine. I'm not mad about being the one reaching out and making plans, but it does get to a point after years and years and years of friendship where you literally see no effort from someone, to the point where, oh, they won't even, you know, make a phone call we don't even live, like, I don't live in the same place as a lot of my friends. And so keeping up with them is, you know, a 3-hour time difference if they're in California, or one of my friends is in Copenhagen, and we make time and energy to make it work and hop on a call. And I, you know, in that case, if we don't live in the same space, you need to have that two-way street. You need to be able to have that other person reach out to you. So I think that's more of where I'm coming from in terms of, okay, if I'm the one always making an effort for people who don't live here, then that's, I don't have time for that.
Yeah. Are you telling your friends just like at the end of the date, how you kind of like make it nice and clean? Will you tell your friends like, I've noticed that I've been the one making all the effort for the last 5 years and I've decided to stop that. Just an FYI, if you actually want to be my friend.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I put this boundary up on my Instagram and I said this, I went offline for 4 days over the, like this past weekend, and I was just exhausted and I wasn't, you know, a lot of things came up for me last week and I needed to take time offline. And I think, you know, as ironic as it is, Instagram has become a big community for me, and I like to show up as my authentic self. And so I set this boundary, and then the second that I did, it was like everyone reached out to me. Are you okay? Oh, I'm so sorry. I haven't been reaching out as much. I haven't been there for you. Or it's like, I needed to say something for people to notice, which is shitty in a way. Like, to me, and there were a lot of people, you know, and it's happened to me before, you know, if I share like when my grandma's passed away last year and things like that happen, and I'm showing emotion. It's like the second anyone shows emotion online, everyone and their mother reaches out and just messages you and goes, oh, I'm here if you need to talk. Are you okay? What's going on? Life will get easier. Don't worry. It's like, I'm sure you have plenty of days where you feel depressed and sad and you cry into your journal for 11 pages, but you don't share it on social media. I'm sharing it because this is my authentic self, and I hope that other people will feel comfortable doing the same. I'm not asking for your support, and I'm not asking for your permission, and I'm not asking for your advice. I am purely here as who I am versus, oh, it's not like I'm doing this as a cry for help.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Right? Mm, and I think mm-hmm. a lot of people see it as that.
You're doing it to show, which is really interesting. Self. Right. You're doing it to right. show your true self. But some of these people came out of the woodwork. Is that what you're saying? Some mm-hmm. of these people who've been ignoring mm-hmm. you or who have been not contributing as much in your friendships
yeah,
are coming up.
Yeah, people were
now?
Coming up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for me, it was, I'm appreciative. I'm not appreciative of the support that I have and that people do care. But I think it just really goes to show that we get so wrapped up into our bubbles. We get so caught up into our day-to-day and maybe our 5 or 6 close-knit friends or the people that we always go out with. And, you know, I get it. Like, time gets away. But I think I've just recently been reflecting on who I really care about. And if I care about people and I don't know if they care about me as much, why am I wasting my time? And in a sense, it was, you know, it was beautiful that people did reach out and they're like, I do care about you. And it was like, oh, nice to hear from you again. And it was a good lesson in, you know, I can lean on people too, and that I can reach out and say, hey, I'm not doing so well. Can you hold space for me while I talk and maybe cry on the phone? Which was really great. But yeah, I think for other people that I don't know that are reaching out, it's like, I have a therapist for this. I have people that I've known since I was 3 or my parents. Like, I don't need this person that I met once or never even met in person that I met through social media. I'm not going to hop on a call with you and explain my life.
Right, right. And nice that they offered, I guess, you know, and then it also kind of feels like somehow an insult, you know, or like a almost like a boundary crossing, like, now you have to take care of them because they reached out to you. And yeah,
totally. So it's just like,
but
okay,
it does
thank
seem
you so
like
much.
There's a couple people, I don't know who they are or what, but that there might be a couple people out there who you're a little upset with that you put so much effort into the relationships and they didn't really respond. And I don't know. I wonder how those conversations would go if they were on the surface, if you could be honest with them and bring that out. And, you know, what I find in my years of doing therapy is that the hardest thing for somebody to say is that they got their feelings hurt. It's like when somebody hurts our feelings, we tend to shut down. We can maybe get angry with them. Maybe we'll talk to some other friends about it, or maybe we'll just hold it in or make up stories. But to go to that person and say, you know what, my feelings are hurt in our relationship, or what you just said, just I feel hurt now. You know, it's the most simple and vulnerable and sweetest, most innocent thing. And yet we scramble like crazy to not show that part of ourselves, to not show our hurt, our vulnerability.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's very true. I think we never want to show our sadness as we get older, and we hold it in, or we, you know, it's something that we have to do privately for some reason. Like, it's this super terrible, awful thing that we have to cry or like get to the point of tears. Like, oh my God, God forbid that we are sitting in a puddle of tears and tissues for an hour. Like, it's the worst thing in the world. It's like, no, we need it. It's a form of release. It's like you're ending and beginning something at the same time. And yeah, I just think, you know, I used to be that person for sure. Like, I would hold things in and like bottle them up, and, you know, I'm not perfect. I'm still learning, but I've gotten to a place where I see crying as beneficial to my mental health versus, oh, this is, you know, I never want to go there. Right.
Oh my God, how many people are told like, don't cry, don't feel, right. You know?
Yeah, everything's yeah. Okay. Like, toughen up.
right. Get over it quick. No, it's so beautiful. Our feelings are so beautiful, you know? They're so raw and real. We can't hide when we're in our feelings. That's the truth. That's our authenticity, is our feelings.
Yeah, totally. Well, amazing. I want to end on that note and just go to some rapid fire questions with you. So how do you get excited for a date?
You know, for me, it would just be like, as much as I could feel myself, as much as I could feel like I was in my body, maybe I dress up a little bit. I'm not really a big dresser-upper, but if I dressed up, that would be like huge. And I would just say, for me, I would actually meditate before a date to get connected to myself. Yeah.
I love that. And what is your ideal date?
Oh, my ideal date would be a short date. Like a coffee date, just like 10 minutes, get to know each other, and then check in and be totally honest. Do you want to go? Should we go for a walk? It's totally fine if you say no. You know, like, do we want to go to the next step? My ideal date would have many tears and with checkpoints where both people were committed to being completely honest at every checkpoint.
Beautiful. And is there a time that you've been ghosted or have ghosted someone, and what happened?
I don't remember ghosting anyone. I don't think I would do that. But I have a ghost who's still in my life. He's been ghosting me ever since we met. And he just, because I'm polyamorous, I don't need him to be any different than a ghost. So I have completely embraced his ghosty nature. And he is like completely comfortable and trusting of me, and we have this ongoing beautiful relationship that mostly exists like in space, like a ghost should, in the ether. But we have this deep love for each other, and he's a beautiful being, but he has a hard time on the earth plane, so he doesn't follow through with commitments very well, and I accept that in him, and it's okay for me when he doesn't show up. It was hard at first, but I got through it to the point where we now have a sustainable ghost relationship.
That's amazing. I've never heard about a friendly ghost on this podcast yet.
He's a friendly ghost, yeah.
Casper, we'll call him Casper.
I should have called him Casper.
You can nickname him that. So where can everyone find you?
I'm online. I have a website. It's just my name, amypalatnick.com. I'm on YouTube. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm on TikTok. But all those links will be on my website, amypalatnick.com. You can get my book there. You can get it on Amazon. Yeah, and they can get on my email list and get free content. I teach dance classes and meditation classes. They're basically free. I just want them to be big. I want people to come. So it's like sliding scale all the way down to zero. Yeah, everything I do.
Amazing. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for this amazing conversation, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Yeah.
Bye.
Great to be with you.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode or this podcast in general, I would greatly appreciate it if you could subscribe, rate, and review below. And if you can think of anyone who would enjoy this podcast, please consider sharing it. As a new podcast, the most helpful thing is to grow by word of mouth. After all, who doesn't enjoy a good date story? Lastly, if you would like to connect with me, please follow me on Instagram at ghosts_ofdatespast. And feel free to shoot me a DM if you have a comment, question, or would like to be a guest. I'm always looking for new people to bring on to the show. Hope you all have lovely weeks, and I'll be back next week for another juicy episode. Bye for now.